The Monty Show, Wednesday, June 11th, 2018. My name is Monty. I say hello to my awesome friend, Jake.
Hello.
It's actually my son, but we're not really friends because he hates the Lakers. He hates the Lakers and he hates BMW, so there's really nothing in common for us. We're going to talk about that. And he's a huge Steve Keim fan, which I can't believe anybody is. He also likes Papa John Schnatter.
What does that even mean?
Yeah, because nobody likes Papa John Schnatter.
Yeah, like, that's cardboard, bro.
So, have you ever had Papa John?
Yeah.
You have? I can't remember a time I have. I have. I'll never have it again. I'll tell you why in a minute. Bad day for the Arizona Cardinals. Bad year for the NFL. The Lakers are amazing.
Cantavious.
The Yankees are in on Machado and Padre Nation. Guys.
Chill.
Come
chill.
On. Eric Lauer threw 95 last night. Take a breath, baby. We'll talk a lot of baseball today, a lot of Padres. Make sure you find us on iHeartRadio. Download the app. Search The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show, wherever you get your podcasts. And you can also find us on Twitter, The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. Jake, let's start with the Arizona Cardinals, because I take great pleasure in ripping that team. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. There's just something inherently unlikable about the Arizona Cardinals. They've had a bad couple of days.
Had a bad couple of years.
On the field, yeah. David Johnson got hurt like the first week last year, out for the year. But then the 4th of July comes, and you're like, okay, the new season's coming. We're all good.
Yeah.
Oh, and then your general manager, Steve Keim, who, by the way, is one of the worst general managers in the NFL, gets a DUI, gives a false name to the cops, is driving a Ford Raptor from a Ford dealer who's partners with the Arizona Cardinals. He refuses to take a roadside sobriety test. He says he has a bad knee. And he refuses to take a breathalyzer. So they arrest him for DUI. The Cardinals say that the behavior is reprehensible. I don't understand how you haven't fired this guy yet or put him on administrative leave.
Yeah.
I'm a little surprised by that. The other thing that bothers me, and I should just say this now, because I think we've talked about this on the show.
Mm-hmm.
I'm anti-DUI. I don't know anybody that's pro-DUI. My point is, I think in this country, we go way too easy on DUIs. Like, I don't think anybody takes it seriously enough. I think the first time you get a DUI, I think you should lose your license forever. Like, I think it should be mandatory jail time. You can't drive again. Like, I think it should be just balls to the wall and penalties. And people will never do it again, right? Like that,
yeah.
In my opinion.
I mean, I totally agree. I mean, I think you and I are capable enough to make that decision of like, hey, we're going to go out. Maybe we shouldn't actually have that one beer that turns into four.
And Keim said he had two beers and some
pizza.
Which
is just total garbage. You probably had like five or six, knowing who he is. And you didn't have enough food, and mainly you didn't have enough water before you went and drove. So you put yourself in a bad position.
Well, not even that. The problem here is that Steve Keim is driving a Ford Raptor, which is a supercharged pickup truck. Like, it's a massive pickup truck. And he's swerving all around the road and was clearly, according to the cops and the body cam footage, intoxicated. You can hear him slurring his speech. And
it's plain as day.
He didn't care about anybody else but himself. Right?
But I think regardless of what truck he was or what vehicle he was driving, it doesn't matter. You could still kill somebody. I just think the part of this that adds to the story is he happened to be driving a pickup truck that was from one of the Ford dealers that sponsors the team.
Yes.
So it made it all that much worse.
Yeah, and by the way, he's not a very good general manager. I mean, this is a guy who, in his time with the Cardinals, has swung and missed on so many draft picks. And David Johnson is very clearly his biggest win, right? Like, I don't even think there is a discussion that David Johnson is his best draft pick.
No doubt.
I think Tyrann Mathieu is a loss. Because it's not even that Tyrann is a guy that didn't play well. You should never have given him that massive contract extension after he had the knee surgery.
Yeah.
That at the end of the day, you had to cut him because of it, because he wouldn't restructure it. So you made a mistake in paying a guy who underperformed, wasn't on the field enough, and then you cut him.
Straight up didn't deserve the money.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't earn that money. And you know, whether you want to say, well, he was hurt, so that doesn't really count. Well, it does count. In the NFL, if you're hurt, you're not valuable. Like, that's how it is. Like, at some point, you just, as a GM, you have to come to that realization. And I think everybody, and we cover this team, everybody was all emotional about the Honey Badger. He's one of the best players this organization's ever seen. And it turns out that's not who the guy was. He's undersized, and he plays like Troy Polamalu did, which means he's going to be hurt a lot, and he's going to not have a long career.
And if you look at some of Kimes' other of Kimes' first-round picks, excuse me, guys like DJ Humphreys, not a star. If you look at a guy like a Hassan Reddick, jury's out on Hassan Reddick from last year. You look at a guy, like, look at his wide receivers. Look at a John Brown.
Look no further than John Brown.
A third-round pick who they said was a star, never performed.
They said, about John Brown, John Brown was supposed to be the guy that you got in the third round, and he was going to be a grade-A, top-tier receiver in this league. And you were going to be able to be on the cheap with him because of where you drafted him. You're going to be able to save that money, put it somewhere else, and then you're going to go win rings. And that didn't happen. He missed on that guy.
Robert Kimdichie, complete bust. I mean, the list is long of guys who have been a bust. Brandon Williams is a bust. Jonathan Cooper is a bust. Troy Nicholas is a bust, not even on the team anymore. It's amazing how many guys he's drafted that just did not work out and have not contributed. And there are some real wins, in my opinion. Andre Ellington, okay, he's an okay player. Serviceable player. Buda Baker was an all-pro last year as a special teamer. Now he's going to have to step up. But what is he? He's replacing Tyrann Mathieu, and he's an undersized safety.
But at least he brought something. At least you got something from him.
Yeah, like Dayon Buchanan was a star, great pick.
Great,
Marcus Golden, a star, great, great transition.
But I think the difference in NFL GMs is that the great ones can find the no-name who is elite, and the average ones find the huge name who's just average. And that's a big deal in the NFL because you end up paying guys more than they should be paid, and that's not how you win.
And they've never corrected the quarterback situation. In my opinion, Carson Palmer was never a guy that was going to carry you.
Dude, Larry Fitzgerald should not be playing football anymore. And the only reason he's playing is because he hasn't won.
He's chasing a ring.
That's it.
He's chasing a ring.
And so at some point I have to say to myself, okay, well, Steve Keim is the reason that Larry Fitzgerald is still playing football. Because if you had done a better job in the draft, if you had been smarter about it, if you had a better strategy and hit more than you missed, you know, Larry Fitzgerald wouldn't be on the field. He'd be in the Ring of Honor, or whatever they call it with the Cardinals, and he'd be in the NFL Hall of Fame. Like, that's where he would be. And so I just sit here and say to myself, okay, you've been an average GM. Now you're out here being a horrible leader, right? Because one way or the other, he sets an example in the community and for the organization. The GM is the front runner in your organization. He is the most accountable person outside of the dumpster fire of ownership that we're about to get to.
Yeah.
You know, so I just think that if you're Steve Keim, you've made a huge mistake, and this is going to cost you in the long term. You're not going to get more opportunities.
Yeah, I don't know how you fix this is the issue. I really don't know how you fix it. I'm not sure what you do.
The right
with
thing
Steve
to do
Keim.
Is to let him go.
Yeah, but they won't, and that's the issue. The right thing to do would have been to say, okay, you're on administrative leave. You're away from the organization until this gets worked out. And if he pleads guilty or is found guilty of DUI or whatever happens,
it's not about the finances at this point either. That should be said.
If that is what happens here, I think you, I think you would have to let him go. I just don't get it. I don't understand how they're so enamored with Steve Keim.
Well, and I think as an organization, and again, you're about to get to this whole story, but before we get to it, I want to say, keep in mind the word accountability when we talk about this next story, because it's a huge word and it plagues them. The lack of accountability plagues that organization.
So Michael Bidwell is a longtime friend. He grew up with Judge Kavanaugh, who President Trump nominated for the Supreme Court. So he has been rounding up support. They make the announcement, the administration makes the announcement that Judge Kavanaugh has been nominated for the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
Michael Bidwell uses the Arizona Cardinals website and the insider on the website.
I love that
word. A guy named Darren Urban, who works for the team and covers the team as the insider at ArizonaCardinals.com. He has Darren Urban write an article talking about how great their relationship is that really is just a fluff piece on Judge Kavanaugh.
Yeah.
Through the NFL Arizona Cardinal website. Then he goes on the Broomhead show in Phoenix and just talks about how great Kavanaugh is and how long they've been friends. And essentially goes into this idea. Michael Bidwell, the owner of the Arizona Cardinals,
yeah,
goes into this idea that what he's doing is not political. He is not using the football team as a political tool. He essentially said that, you know, if the players can, we just want them for 20 days, and then the rest of the time, 20 days a year, and then the rest of the time, they need to be in the community. But this is not political. And then immediately what snaps into my brain is, well, Roger Goodell straight up said that the NFL is a non-political organization. Yet here you have the owner of the Arizona Cardinals trumpeting how great a candidate Judge Kavanaugh is for the Supreme Court, having his insider write a fluff piece about their relationship on the Arizona Cardinals website, and then goes on a, Michael Bidwell goes on a local radio show, insults NFL players again, and says what he's doing is not political and is essentially self-righteous and deprecating against the players.
Yeah.
And it's like, at what point do NFL owners wake up? You can't continue to be the rich white guy in the room insulting the black player, because that's what this is. And when you are Michael Bidwell, the owner of the Arizona Cardinals, you have done very little to be successful as an owner. Very little. You have accomplished nothing. You have this awesome stadium. You're one of the most expensive entertainment tickets in town. Your players are in the community constantly.
Hasn't Larry Fitzgerald won, like, awards? Right,
he
like
has
many.
Larry Fitzgerald softball game every year. Like, he does. He buy. Like,
the I know Arizona David Cardinal, Johnson's in there.
The Arizona Cardinals players are active in the community. But you can't say to a player, you're not going to use the NFL platform to push your social beliefs and then turn around and have your Arizona Cardinal website .com insider write a fluff piece about Donald Trump's selection to the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
The hypocrisy is amazing.
Yeah.
Especially when we already know that Donald Trump is greatly influencing NFL owners. Donald Trump, in my opinion, is why Colin Kaepernick and Eric Reid are not playing in the NFL right now. Donald Trump is why.
Yeah.
Because they don't want that blowback. They make this new anthem policy and Donald Trump rips it. Like, he's using you, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yet the players who have a legitimate gripe, they're kneeling down because they see, Colin Kaepernick anyway, sees police, in his words, murdering his fellow African-American brothers on the streets. And he wants to bring attention to that. Oh, you can't do that. But by the way, this Judge Kavanaugh and I have been friends since we were in diapers. He's awesome. Write a piece, put it on the website.
Yeah. Like, it's embarrassing, dude. It is absolutely embarrassing. And I agree with you. You can't continue to be the rich white guy in the room. That's a great way to put it, because whether you there's so many examples of this. Like, one of the best examples is, you know, when Kaepernick had his meeting. And they didn't even humor him. There was no nothing.
When the players had the meeting,
yeah, they didn't
humor want him. To talk about the owners didn't want to talk about Kaepernick. Took a break, didn't pay attention, were on their phones when they were like, it was amazing.
Yeah.
And then Kaepernick, to me, the most awkward thing here is Kaepernick's deposing these owners in his collusion case. It's awkward. It's, in my opinion, the hypocrisy from Michael Bidwell and other NFL owners, Jerry Jones, I'm talking to you. The hypocrisy, you want to talk about no accountability. Mm-hmm. You want to talk about the fact that they can do whatever they want. Who's going to tell the NFL owners not to do this? Who's going to say, Michael Bidwell, you know, that's not the way you want to use your website?
Well, I think the best way to do it is by not watching. That's the single biggest way you can.
We won't do that.
I will. I don't even enjoy watching it now. The only reason I watch it is because you watch it. Literally, I wouldn't be watching it if it wasn't a thing where we had to watch it to be informed.
But what's the issue with the NFL for you?
The issue with the NFL is, yeah, the accountability piece. It's stories like this. And this is what I've always said. The NFL is unique in the fact that its stories tend to snowball over the offseason. So the season will end. Yeah, the Super Bowl will be outraged by whoever won or will love it, right? And then after that, we wait about a month. It's all quiet. And then all of a sudden, you start getting these little stories. And then that just kind of snowballs. And then we get stories like Steve Keim. And I'm just sitting here saying, what's next? How much worse is it going to get before training camp starts, right?
LeSean McCoy.
Exactly. The Tom Brady stuff. LeSean McCoy.
And for those of you who don't know, LeSean McCoy, the Bills running back, his ex-girlfriend was the victim of a home invasion where she was severely beaten. And the jewelry that LeSean McCoy gave her was stolen from her. And now the lawyer for this ex-girlfriend is saying that LeSean McCoy is responsible for it. He's completely denied it. But the pictures are graphic. She was beaten severely. Now she's being accused of that. Look at this Papa John's story. You want to talk about a problem for the NFL.
Yeah.
And you want to talk about a problem for Papa John's. Like, so you know that Papa John Schnatter, like the guy who founded Papa John's Pizza,
mm-hmm.
he essentially made the argument that the kneeling down controversy is what hurt Papa John's Pizza sales. He tried to draw a direct correlation, said a bunch of terrible stuff that he shouldn't have said. So the Papa John's company said, you know, Papa, I imagine that's what they call John Schnatter. Hey, Papa.
Hey, Pops.
Yeah, so John, we're going to get you some media training. We think the right thing to do is to get you some media training. So they hire one of the biggest media training marketing firms. All right, we're partners now. I think it's called Laundry is the name of the firm. Laundry and Papa John's working together. All right, let's have a conference call with Papa John Schnatter. Hey, let's role play a little bit, Papa John. So they go into this role play session and Papa John Schnatter, right out of the blue, says, well, you know, the Colonel Sanders from Kentucky Fried Chicken dropped the mm-mm word all the time. He called people N-words all the time and, like, dropped an N-bomb. And he's like, growing up in Indiana, they used to pull African-Americans out of their trucks and drag them until they were dead. Like, Anna, this is a meat, sir. I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you, racist, but I just want you to know this is not how we envisioned this going. So the call abruptly ends, and Laundry, this marketing firm, quit, refused to work with Papa John's anymore. This gets out to Forbes magazine.
Oh, man.
Forbes writes the piece and asks Papa John Schnatter for comment. He fully admits it, owns up to it, and said, well, the context, and this is, I was just framing it up to say, and then changed his story and said, yeah, I said it. And anytime you use racist inflammatory language, it's wrong. And I'm sorry. Please buy my pizza. 2-for-1 on a walk-in deal.
Including a Pepsi.
Yeah. You get free Pepsi if you carry out at Papa John Schnatter's.
Yeah.
This guy's a joke.
So my point here is that it's stories like that. It's Brandon Browner. It's LeSean McCoy.
Brandon Browner going to attempted murder,
yeah,
Brandon Browner?
Yeah, dude. Good Lord. Like, you know, so it's just, this is what I mean. So all these stories, why would I watch the NFL? Like, why would I be encouraged to watch the NFL? Oh, that's right. I wouldn't be, because the Cardinals are terrible. There's only a couple great teams in the NFL that dominate the league every year.
The Bears.
Not the Bears, but Trubisky's cool. I give you credit.
Hall of Famer 2031.
So I'm left thinking to myself, why would I not continue to watch baseball? Because it's great content at that time of year.
Yep.
And then when that's over, let's watch figure skating. Let's watch something else, because I'm just not that thrilled with the NFL anymore. The game itself is not good enough to entertain me the whole time.
Man, see, and I'm the total opposite of that.
And by the way, I would just like to say I would not pay for the Sunday. I would not continue to pay for the Sunday ticket.
I love the NFL. I love the game. I love the action. I love the speed. I love the
people
precision.
Dying, you know.
Well, but my point is, my passion has come down because of the CTE thing. There's no doubt about that. My passion for the NFL, for college football, it's why I don't watch the UFC anymore. It's why I'm not a huge boxing fan anymore. I look at guys like Conor McGregor, like throwing that chair, that guardrail through that bus window, and I'm like, dude, there's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
I look at guys like, you know, Floyd Mayweather, the great Dave Duerson, who killed himself. Junior Seau, who killed himself.
So that's what I mean. There's what are the positives of the NFL?
It's entertainment its highest level.
Is it, though? Is it at the highest level the best entertainment you could find?
In sports, yes, it is, in my opinion. Yeah, in granted, I'm a baseball fanatic.
Dude, heads up, I would watch the NBA over the NFL. If they were both on at the same time, I'd watch the NBA.
I'd have trouble with that. And I feel bad saying it because I think we enable a lot of the damage that's being done. Knowing what's happening to the guy inside the helmet, I still watch. And I'm part of the problem. I get that. It's stuff like Michael Bidwell. That's what pisses me off. I'll never support the Arizona Cardinals. I'll never put in... I don't live there full time, so it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
I'll never put another dollar into the Arizona Cardinals. You know, like I will happily go to an LA Rams game. I will happily, when I'm in Chicago, pay to go to a Bears game.
But like, I don't know.
I guess spend a dollar.
This is probably another generational thing. Like I just don't see the greatness. Like I understand the Super Bowl. Okay, I get it. Like it's the Super Bowl. It's one of the biggest things every single year. Totally down with that. But like tuning in for 8 hours a day once a week, like during that time, I'm just like, damn, dude, I get 2 days a week to do whatever I want, and I'm spending 8 hours on you? I don't think so. Not anymore. I really don't think so.
Well, and that certainly is a generational divide because the NFL is losing millennials. There's no doubt about that. The NFL is losing ratings. There's no doubt about that. I think the over-the-air TV on the whole is in trouble sports-wise, which is why the mobile phone is so important. But that's a different conversation. My point is, I think guys like Papa John Schnatter, I think guys like Michael Bidwell, I think guys like Steve Keim damage the NFL brand further. I think this LeSean McCoy story, no matter if he's guilty or innocent, he's guilty. There's just no getting away from this. Ray Lewis will always be a murderer, whether he is or not. There's no getting away from that.
Ray Rice
will always have punched his wife in an elevator.
Mm-hmm.
There's no getting away from that. It's all these stories, and sadly, things like Michael Bidwell being a massive hypocrite are not abnormal. The Spanos family lying through their freaking teeth is not abnormal anymore. You know, and I just don't. That's what's killing my passion. And then you sprinkle in the whole CTE thing. I think about Dave Duerson and Junior Seau a lot when I talk football. Like, and it doesn't even have to be CTE or the Chargers or any of that. Just on the regular, I think about it. It's weird. I'm a weirdo. Honestly, I'm not the most normal cat, I guess, in the world. I watched Conor McGregor throwing that guardrail through that bus window, and I was like, dude, you have brain damage. You have... Money May, the way all these domestic violence things, paying whatever he paid for that watch,
mm-hmm.
$18 million for a watch, dude, you've got brain damage. You've got brain damage, no doubt about it. But like that bothers me. The NFL, I just think there's a kaleidoscope of issues there. And I think it's killing them. I really do. Make sure you follow me on Twitter, The Monty Show, MONTY, The Monty Show on Twitter, by the way. Did you hear the news about Joaquin Phoenix? Remember Joaquin Phoenix?
Mm-hmm.
Gladiator Joaquin Phoenix?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I walk the line, Joaquin Phoenix.
Vexed.
Guess what do you know what his next role is? A Joker prequel. he is going to play the Joker.
But,
and it's a standalone film about the origins of the Joker. And it's not going to be your typical Batman. It's a Warner Brothers production, but it's not going to be your typical superhero Batman movie. It's going to be Joaquin Phoenix forming the Joker.
Hmm.
And it's going to be about social distortion and how he was a black sheep in society.
Yeah.
And it's really going to be much more of a dark crime drama.
Yeah, well, and a lot of people have wondered, and again, this is total nerd moment, but a lot of people wonder, like, when you watch Heath Ledger, there's a lot of references to what, like, the Joker and how the Joker came to be. And so,
it been long enough since Heath Ledger's death and The Dark Knight? Are Batman fans ready for the next great Joker? Because Joaquin Phoenix, Jake, holy cow.
He's got the potential, no doubt. But I'm ready. But what I'm ready for is another great movie like The Dark Knight. That type of feel about a movie, right? Like the Ben Affleck Batman movies, not my spice at all. I'm not a fan. Like it just wasn't great. But The Dark Knight, and even Batman Begins.
10 years.
It's been a decade. Even Batman Begins. Both of those were great movies. Like both of them were just awesome. So I think it's really smart to make a prequel. That's genius. Because it allows us to invest further into who the Joker is, because love him or hate him, you gotta love the guy.
Oh, I want it.
Like,
I want it.
You have to love what the Joker is.
We walk around most days, or we used to, when we used to work together and I'd like see you ever. Anyway, point is, I'm bitter. The we would walk around and quote Batman to each other.
Yeah, it's awesome. But that's what I mean. That's why the Joker is so good, because he's so relatable.
Man.
Like, he might be the villain in that movie, but he's so relatable that it's like, man, just for a second, I want to be you.
I'm ready for it.
Yeah.
And it's going to start shooting. It'll shoot in New York in September, and it could be out in late 2019. So about 18 months.
Yeah.
So we probably still won't have Game of Thrones, but we will have a new Joker.
I think for
movie.
Our sake, Game of Thrones has to end. Like, I know this is the last year, the last season, but man, it's got to end.
At some point, maybe.
It just takes too long.
You know, the other show that I'm really starting to wonder about is The Royals on E! They have not said if there's going to be a season 5.
Yeah.
And I'm sure now there is going to be a season 5 because they'd have canceled it. But
I'm just ready for the next season of Ozarks. I'm ready.
Ozark?
Oh, is it Ozark?
Ozark.
It's Ozark.
On Netflix with Jason Bateman. Great, great television.
Yeah.
But I'm ready for another great movie. I haven't seen, like, what's a movie we've seen lately that we've been
there,
like,
there hasn't been a great, like, dark drama lately. Like, just the feel about, that's what I always say. Like, I don't even know how to describe The Dark Knight other than just to say it has that dark, ominous, serious movie feel about it. And we haven't had one of those in a while. We've had a lot of great superheroes, save the world, you know, Thanos, like all
that.
What was
the Thanos movie?
Avengers.
I think I saw that movie. I was like, damn, that was a good movie.
Red Sparrow was good.
I didn't see Red Sparrow. I don't watch porn.
Excellent
so,
movie.
You know.
Same thing.
Jennifer Lawrence and Red Sparrow. By the way, which the best part of Red Sparrow, I haven't seen it. The best part of Red Sparrow was the Howard Stern interview she did leading up to the release
of
the movie.
So good.
What, listening to Howard Stern on Sirius XM?
Baller, dude.
Hasn't gotten old. All right, let's talk a little Padre baseball. Let's talk a little Manny Machado to the Yankees. I want to start with the Padres because I'm a little frustrated. I am very much a realist when it comes to baseball teams. Okay,
yeah.
As a lifelong Cubs fan, I am 100% a Cubs fan.
Right.
An ugly Cubs fan. Like, did not have an emotional reaction when they won the World Series.
I literally think last night you almost shot Ian Happ through the TV because of how bad he is.
I hate Ian Happ. Send him down. He doesn't have a position, and he swings and misses way too much. Anyway, point is, I know really bad baseball teams when I see them, okay? My favorite player was Leon Durham as a kid. Trust me, I know really bad Keith Moreland, Gary Woods. Like, I know bad baseball teams, okay? The San Diego Padres of 2018 are not a really bad baseball team. They're in a rebuilding mode, and it was interesting last night on Twitter. And some this morning, too, because Ron Fowler was on the Mighty 1090 with Ben and Woods this morning. And as somebody who follows the Padres on a daily basis, that's an interview you're not going to miss. So I'm listening to this interview, and Uncle Ron's just like, yeah, we're not doing as well as I hoped we'd be doing. This rebuild's taking longer than I wanted. And I'm like, yeah, I think everybody's there. But last night on Twitter, Eric Lauer is dominating in the game, right? Like
he looked good.
8 shutout innings.
He had control of the breaking ball.
Yeah, gives up a home run in the 9th. They take him out. They win. Loses the shutout. Loses a complete game. Whatever. I wouldn't have sent him back out for the 9th, but whatever. He's pumped. It's not even that he had a great breaking ball. The idea that Eric Lauer can back that great breaking ball up with a 95-mile-an-hour heater, his four-seamer was dominant. Like, that's what we call development. That's developing a pitcher, right? Lucchese, who goes tonight against the Dodgers, had this hip injury that's kind of set him back a little bit, but he was showing growth and development. And yet, here I am on Twitter having this long-ass discussion about how there's no accountability in the organization, that nobody is doing their jobs, and what's going on? This team is dreadful. And so I get into this discussion, and I said to the guy, hey, did you really expect this team to contend? There's no way 6 of the 9 position players that you run on a daily basis would not be on any good baseball team.
Right.
With all due respect to, you know, Perella, with Margot, who made 2 sensational plays last night in center field and has hit much better of late.
Yeah.
But a guy like Hunter Renfroe is a 3A player. You know, he's a guy that makes a nice play occasionally in the outfield and gives you a little bing-bing here and there. But on the whole, he's going to strike out a whole lot and he's going to be pedestrian as a defender.
Right.
He's never, like, is Hunter Renfroe ever playing for the Boston Red Sox?
No.
The Yankees, the Astros, the Cubs? No. Travis Jankowski, love the guy's spirit. The answer's no. But you can go with Hedges, who hit a bomb last night out to the warehouse. You can put Austin Hedges. I'd love to have him on the Cubs. The Cubs don't have a second catcher, but he's too good to be a second catcher.
He's
not good enough. But he's not good enough to be a starter on the Cubs, Astros, Red Sox, right? Not good enough yet. But he's developing and he's getting there. And I'm just saying, you have all this talent coming. You know, like Urias is a guy, I'll just say it again, he's in the All-Star game tonight. Why is he not in the majors right now? I'm telling you, next week, the kid needs to get called up after the All-Star break. You know, like he's playing in the AAA All-Star game. The Major League All-Star game is Monday and Tuesday.
Darnold for the Giants. They called him up. He was the best player in that league.
You need to call Urias up. You need to get these guys up who can get up. You need to promote Tatis. You need to get on with getting on. Because the next 2 years, 2019 and 2020, it's all coming to bear. All these prospects are going to mature into major leaguers, and they're going to make it or they're not. And I'll give Woodsy credit. He straight up said on Twitter, my biggest question is, can this organization develop all these prospects? I think they can. You're seeing it right before your eyes. Fowler's spending money to get a guy like Eric Hosmer, who granted is struggling. He's in a slump right now, but he's everything you need at first base for a team that's got ground ball pitchers. Like, you're doing the job.
Yeah.
Now, Tyson Ross, and here's the other thing, and I'm trying, like, and I know we have a lot of listeners in San Diego, and I'm not trying to be a dick. You've got to let go of the emotional attachment you have to Clayton Richard, that you
like,
have
but
to
I don't
Tyson
understand.
Ross.
Like, what are you holding on to with these guys? They're good. They're great players on the Padres because you're not a great team right now.
They're not great players, Jake.
Well,
they're
are for
just
the Padres,
okay.
Though. And right. And on a quality, on a contender, Clayton Richard is maybe a fifth. Like, Clayton Richard's better than Tyler Chatwood.
The Cubs didn't keep him.
Yeah.
The Cubs had him.
Yeah,
and the Cubs let him go.
Yeah,
because he's not a guy that can be in your rotation when you have aspirations of winning the West. He frankly, what does it say that the Giants are trying to trade Samardzija? They would probably take Clayton Richard. Sadly, your Giants. But look at their rotation. nobody's talking about the fact that your best young pitcher is not even available to you in Danielson Lamet.
Yeah.
Because he had the elbow injury, Tommy John surgery, right? Nobody's talking about guys like Jordan Lyles, who's hurt. He's got this elbow inflammation. I think he's been out, what, going on 3 weeks now. Like, you know, you're not going to hit a home run with every prospect.
Yeah.
But these guys have not missed on a ton of prospects yet. Like, it sucks Franchi's hurt. Like, Franchi Cordero, it sucks that he's hurt. Because he is a guy that really could be working for you. But he's probably done for the year at this point. So you're running out guys like Tyson Ross and Clayton Richard and somebody like a, I don't know, what do you think of Perdomo? He's not been up. He has not been good this year. I don't know if he's a star.
Like, he's not a star. What do you mean, do you know if he's a star? He's not a star yet. Projecting a guy to be...
But does he have it?
Well, look, and this is my opinion. Projecting a guy to be a major leaguer is one thing. Projecting a guy to be a star power is another thing. You know right away that Bryce Harper is going to be a star. You know right away that guys like that. You know Chris Sale is going to be a star, even when he played for the crappy White Sox. You knew that.
Watching Eric Lauer with a 95 four-seamer?
I think he's got it in him.
It's there.
But for him, again, and this is... This applies to so many guys on the Padres, it's not even funny. But comparing Lauer to Chris Sale, the difference is that Chris Sale's got 100 miles an hour in that arm. Lauer does not. So Lauer's going to need to develop mentally more than he is physically.
Lucchese does not,
exactly. Yeah. Clayton Richard does not. But the difference is Clayton Richard locates and knows how to beat you mentally. So that's why he has success.
Trading, like Brad Hand is another emotional conversation. You got to trade
Brad
Hand.
That's a straight up emotional attachment. You're right. Everybody thinks that he's a great closer. He's not a great closer.
He's not a championship caliber club. Like, I'd love the Cubs to trade for Brad Hand. He is a lefty specialist every single day.
Yeah.
I would love
to see
that.
He should be the Sergio Romo of the Giants. That's who he should be. He should fill that slot. Like, he should be that guy. And when you need innings out of him, he can give you a couple innings.
Yeah, and that's it. You need the Affelt, Lopez, Romo, Wilson setup. That's what you need. And Brad Hand certainly fits into that. And I'd love to see Brad wind up with the Yankees or the Red Sox, the Cubs, the Dodgers,
somewhere
who certainly are out there. Yeah.
He hasn't been anywhere competitive in quite some time.
I'd hate to see him on the Dodgers. That's the only team where but I hate the Dodgers. Like, I can't stand the Dodgers in any way, shape, or form. That's the other thing. Can we stop calling Steve Garvey a Padre legend? Please? Please. How long was Steve Garvey on the Padres? I think 2 years. I want to say Steve Garvey is a freaking Dodger. I don't know why that bothers me so much. This is one of those things where I hear it and I'm like, no, man, no, no. And this might be a Woodsy thing too. Like, his number's retired or something. And it's like, come on, man. Like, I get that his number's retired, but he's not a Padre legend. Let's just stop talking about, anyway, Steve Garvey's an L.A. Dodger. Yeah, well, no, I don't. In fact, he played 5 years for the Padres.
It's long enough.
The guy hit 200 home runs for the Dodgers in 61. He barely hit 10 home runs a year. This guy, he's not a freaking Padre. Steve Garvey is an L.A. Dodger. I feel better.
Good.
Thank you.
Good
talk. He played 14 years for the Dodgers, man. He's a Dodger. He was on those, and I hate to say it, he was on those great Dodger teams. So let him be a Dodger. Anyway, all right, I'll stop.
Yeah.
You know why I hate Steve Garvey? Because he beat the Cubs in 84. And I'll never forget it. I will never forget the Cubs coming out to the Murph and getting swooped. Like, I'll never forget that. Because
yeah.
I thought that that was going to be the year. I was a young little Monty who was excited. And, you know, I probably, you know, ruined my corduroy knee pads playing in the yard, being Leon Durham, who was my favorite player. And freaking Steve Garvey ruined all that. Screw you, Craig Lefferts. Anyways, you don't even know who that is. Anyway, it is what it is.
Yeah.
I think the Padres are right where they're supposed to be. And I'm thrilled with what they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing is that you need to see development from all their players. All your top prospects need to develop, and I agree with you that, you know, Urias, he needs to come up. You know, I don't know what the reason. There's clearly a reason he's down, in my opinion. You don't keep a guy down.
I think
there
it's
that
contact
long.
Rate. They want a higher contact rate, which I get. But he hits.
Yeah,
he hits. He has very good command of the zone. But that's the big deal. One other thing.
Mm-hmm.
This is another, and I don't. Maybe we should stop saying his name. But so Woodsy from Ben and Woods in the Morning.
Yeah,
Mighty 1090. Also said that ticket prices are too high. And I just want to say, okay, well, let's lower ticket prices. When this team gets to 500, are you prepared to pay 20 more bucks a ticket? Oh, yeah. When this team is winning the NL West, are you prepared to pay 100 bucks to sit in the outfield? When this team, because I think eventually, listen, a blind squirrel finds a nut. When this team's in the World Series,
you know, just that's a big nut, but it's a nut nonetheless.
And I know about big nuts.
Yeah,
the point
you know.
Is, when this team's in the World Series, are you willing to pay 150 bucks, 200 bucks, 250 bucks? Are you willing to pay what the Cub fans are paying right now? The highest ticket prices in baseball. Are you willing to do that? Because if you want a price cut on tickets because they suck. And they're in development and clearly on the way up, doing the right things.
Better have that bread wedding ready when they're good.
That's my point. Don't bitch about the ticket prices now. Because as they win, they will go up.
Yep.
And what goes up doesn't come down when it comes to ticket prices.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you that right now.
Yeah.
So I...
Unless you're the Atlanta Falcons, of course.
I get it. You want ticket prices to come down. Yes, good point. They did lower ticket prices. But it doesn't happen very much. Can we talk about the Yankees and Manny Machado now, please?
Yeah.
The Orioles are supposedly close to trading Manny Machado. I'm not a Manny Machado fan.
I know.
You love this guy. Anyway, the New York Yankees are close to trading for Machado. Right now. And the sticking point apparently, allegedly, is one of the Yankees' top prospects in Justice Sheffield, a fine left-handed pitcher, who I would not trade, who Ryan Cashman is reticent to trade. But they are willing, apparently, to trade Miguel Andujar as part of the Machado deal.
Which makes sense.
You are a casual observer of the New York Yankees in that you are a Giant fan, but your secondary sort of team is Aaron Judge's.
Yeah, I pay attention.
The Aaron Judge's jockstrap team.
Right.
I don't know why I said that. But right now, Andujar is your starting third baseman, and boy, he's a nice little piece.
Half a year.
Nice little piece. Would you trade Andujar and several other prospects?
Yep.
You would?
Yep.
Gleyber Day?
If he's ready to play third base.
Andujar and Gleyber Day.
No, I wouldn't trade Gleyber Day. No.
So,
no.
So
I would trade...
Would you trade Gleyber Torres to get Manny Machado?
Well, yeah, straight up I would.
You would?
Yeah, straight up.
Ooh. I think...
Especially if I'm getting Manny for 5 years. Yeah.
I think Gleyber Torres is one of the best players in baseball in 5 years from now. Like,
that
I
could
think
be true, but they're not trying to play for 5 years from now. They're trying to play for today.
True, but right now he's an impact player for them. I would not trade Torres. I would absolutely trade Andujar to get Machado, because I think if you have an infield, and this is all assuming that Manny Machado is willing to play third base. I'll never say that again. I apologize. I can see you fuming. This is all assuming that Manny Machado is willing to play third base in the Bronx.
Which I think he is, because I think he's not good enough to tell the Yankees that he's going to play shortstop.
He's not good enough.
Not as a shortstop. I think as a third baseman, he would do very well there.
So if it was Machado at third, Didi at short, Gleyber Day at second,
mm-hmm.
is Greg Bird good enough at first base at that point?
Yeah.
Okay, then you know, I think the rest of your lineup is set.
Yeah.
Right? Because you're going to have Gardner. You're probably going to play Hicks every day in center field. You're going to play Judge in right field. Stanton probably gets some run in left field too, but just he's your DH on the regular.
It just depends on the day. Yeah,
yeah. I think you're in a really amazing shape at that point.
Yeah, and this is kind of the discussion we had the other day. I mean, the big question here is, do you trade to get one player in Machado, a great player in his own right, or do you trade to get an Archer in Moustakas at first base?
And how worried are you that you're giving up Andujar and you're renting Machado?
But see, I don't think they'd be renting him because I think the Yankees have the class to pull a guy like Machado. He wants to play for them.
I think you still got to make the Moustakas trade.
Yeah.
I think, and at that point, I think you still got to make the Archer trade. They need a pitcher.
They do, yeah.
And that's the elephant in the room here. So even if you have this great, Sanchez behind the plate, your Didi.
Your defense is great at that point.
Yeah, Didi and Gleyber up the middle.
Dude, Machado's an elite defender at third base. Yeah. Not great at short. Has put up bad numbers at short. Fine. Whatever you want to say, great. But he's one of the best third basemen that the league has seen. Like, defensively, he's just made insane plays. You know, and it's largely because of his frame, his length, and his athletic ability. So I think if you have him at third, that pretty much solidifies you defensively. But the problem is playing in Yankee Stadium, great defense is kind of marginalized just because that's a wiffle ballpark, man. That's easy bombs there.
So then do you move Hicks down to where Andujar is now? And because the lineup also is a big question. Because what does that do to their lineup? Because Guardy's still going to be your leadoff hitter. I think you probably are taking Machado and hitting him second.
Yeah.
Because I'm not the guy.
That's the greatness. It depends who's pitching, and it depends what the numbers say.
I hate that argument. See,
it's today's game.
So for me, and this is just me, I'm a big believer that Aaron Judge is wasted in the two-hole, that Chris Bryant's wasted in the two-hole, that Bryce is wasted in the two-hole or the leadoff spot.
When
you have a pure leadoff hitter like Guardy,
yeah.
Why wouldn't you put Machado second, Judge
third,
Stanton
fourth? Well, you would always lead off Gardner. That's not what I'm saying. That I think I'm more talking about the fifth slot in the lineup. I'm more talking about pushing guys down one slot in an effort to get more guys on base for the meteor order.
But wouldn't you love Didi Gregorius to hit fifth in that lineup?
No.
What he's done this year? Oh, really?
I'd want him to hit second behind Gardner.
I think Didi at Yankee Stadium is an RBI machine. And I love him fifth. I know it sounds crazy.
But he's a left-handed hitter. But listen to this. He's a left-handed hitter. Short porch at Yankee Stadium. And you're really telling me that guys are going to pitch around Didi to get to Manny or to get to Judge or Stanton
right.
in the third?
But I think, no. What I think you do is I think you go Guardy in the leadoff spot. I think you go Machado two. I think you go Judge three. Stanton four. And I'm open to the idea that you have some flexibility with that five hole because I think Gleyber could do some things there. But Didi on the regular hitting in the five hole backed up by Gleyber Torres, I think you're breaking people's balls at that. Like, how do you, who are you pitching around there? And we haven't even talked about the fact that you have a guy in Sanchez, that when he's healthy, I think is a 20 home run guy. Greg Bird at some point is going to figure out how to hit in the major leagues.
He's
I would hope
a
so.
More.
Well, but how are you going to get 100 games out of him? So I think there's questions there. Right, so this lineup's going to score you 6-7 runs a day. Right, these are all good conversations to be having.
But the argument, they are not building this team to score 6 or 7 runs a day. They're building this team to beat Chris Archer in the post or Chris Sale in the postseason.
Then I don't think there's any question you're batting Machado second. And you're moving Didi down. And then if it's Chris Sale, I could see tweaking things maybe and you move a left-handed hitting Didi down to 7 or 8, move up Hicks or Gleyber. Like you have now flexibility pieces, but I think 1 through 5, or 1 through 4, you don't touch that every day. I think it's Guardy. I think it's Machado. I think it's Judge and Stanton. And then you figure out the bottom five in the lineup, and it's a great problem to have. So I think you're set there. But I think your point on pitching is you can't go to the postseason with Severino, Herman, Sabathia, Sonny Gray, and Tanaka.
Isn't it amazing how far Sonny Gray's got on one great start with the A's?
That's a great point. He's
one
such a disappointment.
One dominant start in the postseason against the Tigers as an A. wearing that white pant, gold uniform. Dominant start.
Yeah. And they, how, yeah, they need Chris Archer, who's off the disabled list now. They're the ones that need to make that trade, in my opinion. And the other question is, do they take Zach Britton in the Machado deal? Because there's a lot of people saying, there's a lot of people saying they want to package those two guys together. So I think there's a lot of good discussion there. I would give up Andujar. I would not give up Gleyber.
Agreed.
To get Machado.
Mm-hmm.
Who needs him more, the Yankees or the Dodgers? Machado.
The Yankees.
I think the Yankees need him more, too.
Because I don't think the Dodgers are winning the World Series either way.
And I think it's awkward with Seager.
And Turner.
Well, but I think...
Machado's a better third baseman.
And my point is, I think that makes it awkward because Machado would be a shortstop there. And
until
then,
Seager came back. But I think if you're going to trade for Machado, you got to cut Turner loose.
Dude,
you do.
He's one of the best bats in baseball.
Dude, you're ripping Padre fans for being emotional. That dude is 33 years old, has been hurt, and has hit a few home runs this year.
He got hit by a pitch. He broke his wrist.
I don't care. He's 33. More the reason.
Well, and he's ugly. I mean, Justin Turner is not an attractive
man.
Dude,
he's a freaking gnome, bro. Like, that's what he is.
I love that. I do. Can we end with the Lakers, or should we just end it? We're at 51 minutes. I mean, I haven't said LeBron's name once today.
No, we need to give that a break. Let's give it
a break. I did say Cantavius.
Let the NBA rest. We've talked a lot of NBA. Let it rest, man.
Come on. Okay, let's talk BMW then.
Okay.
Let's finish the show talking
BMW.
I'm
good with that.
Cantavius.
you know.
I can't believe you're not going to let me talk Lakers.
No.
Anyway, all right. BMW 8 Series. You know I am in love with this car. It is a fine automobile.
Right.
It's going into production, and now we know a retail price.
Yes.
Tell the story.
So this is the price was rumored between 105 and 115. That was kind of the accepted range. And again, this is not for the M. This is for the 850i, just to be clear.
Eight cylinder.
And it's going to be the M850i. So it gets M trim, but the core of the car is not M. The price, the base model for the M50i, this is just base, kind of just chilling, super nice still, but just base model, not tricked out, is $111,000. 4.4 liter, 523 horsepower.
Do they take checks?
No.
Let me just tell you, I want that car. I will legitimately get divorced if I buy that car.
Yeah.
My wife will dump my ass if I buy that car. I'm probably going to buy it. I'm not. I will convince her. Having said that.
It's BMW's Corvette, man. That's what it is.
Now, this is not a political show because, as Roger Goodell has said. As Roger Goodell has said, we are not a political operation on this here podcast. That's another podcast.
Right.
The tariffs are a little concerning to me because on average it adds $2,700 or something stupid like that to the cost of a car.
Dude, if you're buying that car, why do you care?
Well, because at $110,000 or whatever it is, it's every dollar matters, right?
No.
Okay.
No.
It doesn't.
Not at that price. No. If you, dude, if you have $111,000, that's like, you shouldn't even be sweating it.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you shouldn't be thinking twice about it if you got that kind of money.
I love that car. I love that. It's on my Twitter feed, by the way, the Monty Show. M-O-N-T-Y, the Monty Show. The M8 is just, it's freaking amazing. But just the base Model 8, that's a pretty good looking car.
It is.
I mean,
it's a rocket ship for sure.
It is. And you got rid of the 6 Series. I believe they stopped making the 6 Series. And the 4 Series.
Yeah.
Completely went away. Are they still making the 6? I don't think so.
I don't remember.
This is a better version, in my opinion. This is a better version of the 6. And it just is, I mean, it's remarkable. This car is, I mean, there's not a whole lot that...
Yeah, they stopped making the 6 Series, yeah.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot that you can say about this car, even at $112,000. There's not a whole lot you can say about this car that...
But for me, the conversation is more about what kind of car do you want?
Like, I want a twin-turbo V8. Would be great. Thanks.
No, but the experience. But what I'm saying is the experience of the car. Like, this car is quiet, right? Like, this is a quieter car. It's very smooth. It's very luxurious. Mm-hmm. It's a great-looking car.
I want a car that makes love to me as I drive it.
Okay, well, what does that even sound like?
What?
Or look like?
Oh, sorry. I took that literally. I want a twin-turbo V8. I want a car that's going to push me into the seat back a little bit. I traded in a 535, an M Sport 535i for a Toyota Tacoma.
Uh-huh.
So there's going to be a significant change in posture at that point.
Right.
One of the things that really stands out is comfortability. Like, I drive a lot. When I drive my car up to the mountains, or, you know, when you go to Bear, or you go up to LA, or like, my hip falls asleep because the seat's uncomfortable. In the 5, I never had that problem because the seats were incredibly comfortable.
Right.
On demand power. It gives me power before I have to ask for it. This the 8 series, the 850 is a twin turbo V8.
Yeah.
I said it's a twin turbo V8. Right. With an amazing suspension package, with incredible balance, with a wheel and tire package that is meant to be driven. I mean, it is a coupe that is everything you want in a coupe. Like, it is, it's a sports car and a touring car.
But like, they're transforming the coupe figure. Like, the M2 is a coupe, right?
Yes.
But that's a smaller car. That's a small performance-oriented car. This to me is Beamer's Corvette. If you look at the body, you look at the way it's sleek. It's got a V8 in it. Now, I know Corvette is supercharged. This is twin turbo. That's a big deal for some folks.
Yep.
But I just think that Beamer has done well here to get rid of the 6, because that's what the 6 was.
Yep.
The M6 is just a beast.
Two-door coupe.
It's just a beast.
And that's what I want. Having had a 4-door versus a 2-door coupe, I want the 2-door. I want the low to the ground. I miss my BMW.
Mm.
I don't miss the cost of ownership. I don't miss $1,000 tire. Like, each tire's a grand. I don't miss that. But that's something you know when you get into it.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point in my life, I'm ready to get into it knowing that. I have trouble ever thinking I'll pay $100,000 for a car. Not that I'll have the money to do that, because I believe I do and will. But that's a lot of money for a car. And I still haven't been to Rome or Milan or Sicily or Paris or Brussels. Like, there's other things I want to do. There's, like, making out with my wife at the Eiffel Tower is more meaningful than driving the 8 series every day.
So we spend less and we mod.
That a boy. But you know what I'm saying? Like, that's the issue that I have. Like, right. It's hard for me to imagine paying that much for. Now, if in 5 years, because I think 5 years from now, I will have been to Paris multiple times. I will have seen a lot more of the world than I've seen today. Maybe I'm in a different place. Right. Now, having said that, 5 years from now, I don't even know if I'll be alive. You know, like, I mean, Trump at the G7, at the NATO, you know, like, back-to-back world summit has pissed everybody off, so maybe we won't even be here. The point is, I hope that I find myself in the lifestyle position to say, yeah, hey, let's take the Beamer.
I just want
to
see one. You know, and we will. It'll be here for sure.
I don't want to see it. I want to own it. My problem is when I go and drive it and sit in it.
There's something about this that I'm just like, this car isn't me. Like, I love the car. It's not me, though. I would much rather have...
Well, you're 25 years old.
No, but at the same time, I would much rather have, like, the more raw feeling in a car. Like, the 5 Series was smooth. It was, like, it was everything you wanted, right? Like, it was fast.
I'm a 5 Series guy.
Oh, I like the 5 Series.
I am a 5 Series guy.
Yeah.
But this 8 is Good Lord.
Well, it's on another level.
This eight's a 6 foot blonde with incredible curves. Yeah. I mean, like you turn and look at the eight. There's no doubt about that.
And it's all wheel drive, by the way.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's a 50. You know, I mean, this truly is, I never thought that BMW would be able to say, yeah, we're not going to make the six because we want to do better. Because the six series was a wonderful machine. Yeah. Like that was absolutely a beautiful, beautiful automobile. And now you're into the 8 series, and it's a complete step up everywhere you go. It's smoother, more. You talk about raw power.
Yeah.
You can, like, one of the big things to do is change the exhaust on the 5 and the 6 series. I don't know what this will look like in an 8, but,
yeah.
Like, one of the things I really wanted to do, I never did, is delete my mufflers on my 5 series because it gives you a more raw sound.
Yeah.
Like, there's ways to do it. If I'm paying 112 G's for a car, I'm not changing my exhaust.
Exactly, and that's what I'm saying. Like, if you're paying that number, like you're not doing those things. So it is a question of. And the other thing, I was thinking about this the other day too. If you really think about it, what's the smarter investment, right? Like, because if you want to travel, the 8 Series is probably not the car you want. You can still get Beamer, just don't buy the 8 Series. Buy a used 4. You're not buying a 2 because that's not really you.
Nah.
That's not your style.
No, I really want the next sports car I buy will be a coupe. It'll be a 2-door coupe. It'll be, you know. And I don't like buying new cars. I like a certified pre-owned because it gives me a little more flexibility and.
Yeah. Well, it's a smart move.
Yeah. I don't, it'll be interesting. Let's just say that. I mean, it's such a machine. It's just such a beautiful automobile, this 8 series. I mean, if you have a chance, you should. And I love the chocolate interior, chocolate leather interior, the pointed seats where, you know, they've got every adjustment
you
could
want. If I'm buying an 8, it's going to be all black with a red interior. Like,
yeah. You know what? To each their own. Some like blondes, some like brunettes. Some like Strawberry Fields Forever. I can't tell you what to like.
Yeah.
But they've got something for everybody.
They do.
So.
True.
That is very true. Anyway. All right. I need to go spend some time alone in my room.
Okay. Good talk.
Tomorrow we're going to talk Lakers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care what you say.
Okay.
I'll do it alone.
Yeah.
Anyway. Make sure you follow us on Twitter, The Monty Show, MONTY, The Monty Show. You can always listen to the show in the iHeartRadio app, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, anywhere you get your favorite podcast, you can find The Monty Show. Say goodbye, Jake.
Goodbye, Jake.